This is going to be a fun episode of Hold My Cutter coming your way from Bern by Rocky Patel, just a couple of blocks from the North Shore. Because you know, on this show, we talk baseball, of course. Hold My Cutter, baseball, cut fastball, the cutter, and the cutter of the cigar. But we have someone who is maybe outside the box would describe Bethany Hallam. Is that fair to say?
That's a really nice way to put it. Yeah. That's a nice way to put
so
it.
Maybe down at some point we might get into politics, because she and I are polar opposites. I won't tell you where she stands or where I stand. We'll just say that.
We'll figure it out.
Or Michael, for that matter.
But the cool part is when you were telling me about Bethany and her coming on, that you can actually have the conversation.
Well, I see. I think Bethany, no disrespect, is almost an old soul. I'm old. I'm an old soul. But in the respect that we respect each other, like we can argue over a cigar and maybe a drink. Now, we've got some coffee here. Good coffee, by the way.
Yeah.
Take a sip of this.
Cheers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Isn't that good coffee here at Bern?
I love caffeine.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. But anyway, so we have had we haven't known each other forever, but a couple of times we've had some really good knock 'em, sock 'em debates and arguments
here.
And
this is the ring.
But I think it's so cool, so old school, is that she's passionate about and she really believes it too. I think too many people in politics are phony politicians. She's a real politician who firmly believes in her stuff, and I feel the same way. So anyway,
I respect that, by the way. Before we even get started, people that have a reason and have a why, you have a background, you have a reality. We all do. So we know what we know from the context of our life and the knowledge that we've gained. The only way to learn more is to talk to people that know something different, right? Or people that are way smarter than you. Exactly. Yeah. And that's how you come together.
Yeah.
Allegheny County Council Member Bethany Hallam. We ask everybody to start with their story. You're a Pittsburgher. You're a Yinzer. Right?
I love. I got the 412 tattooed in my lip. That's
literally does.
Pirates on my hip, 412 in my lip.
You really have it?
She's got the tattoo on 412 under her lip.
And did that hurt?
And then for the TV audience,
the black
for the visuals,
and yellow nails,
she's actually
always
showing
all in. I love that you didn't put the star. It's just a true P.
Yes, yeah,
that's
of
real.
Course.
Yeah. That's real. Wow.
So anyway, so your start. She's actually an athlete, a big athlete. North Hills High School lacrosse, right?
Yeah, I was the goalie.
And what I'm leaving my hat backwards because you said I looked like a catcher.
You did.
And I know now why you said that.
But
you're a goalie.
And similar to McHenry, you got hurt playing lacrosse. He got hurt in a major league game.
Yep.
What happened?
I was in my junior year, and we were practicing a new trick play. So in girls lacrosse, we don't have a pocket in our stick like the boys do, right? Okay. But the goalie does.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So the goalie isn't allowed to score a goal with the goalie stick. And so if a goalie ever...
So how does it work with the actual position players?
They have a flat net that you just cradle up here instead of down here like
now,
the guys do.
My brother played lacrosse, college lacrosse. Yeah. I never knew the difference.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. When the boys test their stick, they can see the whole ball in the net. So you hold your stick sideways and you can see the whole ball in the net before the game. You know, to make sure it's regulation.
Right, right.
For the girls, you can't see the ball underneath.
I never
so
knew that.
So is that because the boys need a ball sack?
And lacrosse players that are girls have bigger ones than the guys do.
I don't get it.
That's why they put us in skirts to feminize
But
it's tough.
Make it
you
make
seen
sense
girls
to
lacrosse?
Yeah, but like it should be tough because you don't have, when you have to do this the whole time, that's a lot harder. Why don't you have a net? That makes no sense.
I have no idea.
There's no reasoning.
No reasoning that I know of. It's just a different sport. The boys are more contact than the girls are, so I always assume that it was because when you get body checked, which you can't do in girls lacrosse, you can only stick check. Boys can full-on body check each other. And so it's probably easier to keep the ball in the net.
Unbelievable.
Whenever you're getting checked.
Wait, Bethany, you said something about a goalie can't score a goal. Would you?
In girls lacrosse, because the goalie has more of a pocket than the other team members do.
Once again, that's weird.
Yeah, and so a goalie stick can't score. So we were practicing this trick play where I would get the ball, I would pass it to one of the players on the field, I would run out of the crease, go and grab her stick, run down the field and score.
Oh my gosh.
And so we're practicing this play, and it seemed so inconsequential at the time. Like my foot planted and my leg kept moving when we were doing the stick pass, and I tore my ACL. I didn't even know at the time. What I did, it hurt a little bit.
You got wobbly.
It got really weak, but I didn't have any pain yet. It wasn't until my parents came to pick me up, we were on our way home, that it started hurting, and throughout the night, I was in excruciating
pain. The next day, you're like, uh-oh.
went to the hospital. You know, they scheduled an MRI, got an MRI. They knew as soon as I got there what I did. And so that's really when it started, right? So I got the surgery, I did the physical therapy, and throughout it all, I'm prescribed painkillers. And I'm taking them as directed, you know, as needed for pain. And I go through all my rehab. I'm getting cleared to go back to lacrosse, and I'm in gym class my senior year in high school playing handball, and I took gym class very, very seriously.
I would have guessed that.
You're absolutely. Competitor.
Yeah. I love you sports, like but to I also lose, love to win.
Bethany, you don't like to lose.
No, I don't lose very often.
Okay. We'll talk about that a little bit later.
So you have to define losing, I guess, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. Different people have different standards. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I tore my ACL again, like 9 months later.
Same.
My other leg.
I was about to say, it's very rare to do, you know, the same leg.
And so I did it. And so that was like 9 more months. It was almost 18 months altogether that I was on painkillers, going through surgeries and rehab.
So you finished. It's a 6 to 8 month rehab.
Yep.
Where were you at when you were playing handball?
Oh, I was at about 8.5 months, almost 9.
Okay. So that's when you're supposed to be full go, but
yeah,
for your sport, not necessarily.
By the way,
and it wasn't lacrosse season, which was why I was like preparing for my senior year season. Gotcha. I ended up getting hurt right before it started.
By the way, Bethany, why lacrosse? What made you pick up lacrosse?
It's a badass sport.
But what about, were there other sports, softball?
I was a swimmer most of my life.
Okay.
And so once you get to a certain level of swimming, it is such a high commitment.
But like, why?
Why is swimming such a high commitment?
No. Why did you choose, like,
it was a new sport. My babysitter, actually, who lived down the street, okay, who has since passed away, she was really inspirational in my life. And her boyfriend were on the first North Hills lacrosse team. The sport was just coming. When I started in seventh grade, which is when North Hills Junior High starts, that was the first year that North Hills had a middle school team. And the boys' team was still club. It wasn't even school sanctioned.
And you stopped swimming, right?
I stopped swimming.
Because Gerber, I don't know if you know their hours.
Oh,
it's miserable.
Work.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. The only way you get into it is someone that you really cared about says, you should do this. Yeah. And you do it and you're like, I can't quit.
Yeah.
First time I swam a mile, I thought I was going to like drown. And they were just looking at me. And I'm like, does anybody help me if I do fall under? It was awful.
Oh, I love swimming.
I do too, but it's so.
You had to give it up for
lacrosse.
Yeah. Swimming turned into, you have to practice in the morning at 5 a.m. Yeah. You have to practice after school at 3 p.m. twice a night. You have to do dry land in the off season. It just turned into, I loved it, but it was such a commitment that I had to choose between just swimming or everything else.
Okay.
And so, yeah, someone I really cared about got me into lacrosse, and I loved it.
Were you good at it?
Oh, I was so good at it. Yeah, I got picked for, you know, national goalie school, and
wow.
I was really into it. I mean, that was my plan. I was going to go to college and play lacrosse.
Really?
And,
was North Hills any good as a team?
Well, when I was on the team, but in general, yeah, North Hills has a good lacrosse team.
Of course.
I won't say that
Dig
I had
me
anything
much.
To do with it, but we were
I
really
was the team. I
yeah.
I'm now
yeah.
start talking in third person, we'd be set.
A lot of the players from the North Hills girls team went on to play in college. A lot of the guys from the boys team, even when it was club, went on to play in college as some of the former players or even coaches now. Yeah, it was a pretty
big
thing. And it was just getting started, so there was a lot of hype around it because it was a new sport. And
do you follow it at all?
I watch college lacrosse sometimes. You know.
Yeah.
You know, I miss it.
Yeah.
You should play. I guarantee you there's an adult league. Like, there's an adult cricket league.
I am never, ever, ever. I did some PSL, you know, about Pittsburgh Sports League. I did that. I played kickball. It's basically beer kickball. They have other sports, though, too.
Oh, cool.
I did some sand volleyball for them. But 2 years ago, I actually tore my ACL again.
Wow.
And so, and it was
How'd
so,
you do that?
It was so on a pogo stick showing off for a bunch of kids at a block party. And yeah, I mean, everybody said, do not get on the pogo stick. You have bad knees.
I would have gotten on the pogo stick.
I got on it and I was doing tricks. Like, so when you jump and you like spin it while you're jumping.
Yeah.
And the kids were so impressed. And until I fell. And
unbelievable.
To make her feel a little bit better, I partially fractured my wrist this summer on a skateboard.
Yeah.
Showing off with my neighbor, 6-year-old. We were having some
fun. It's always the kids. Well, bad influences.
Yeah, it's like, I skateboard, and then I wasn't paying attention. There's a whatever trucked me. I went.
Yeah.
So you're.
What happened to me?
You're,
it was traumatic, though, when I did it again, because after those first two times, I got hooked on the pain pills.
So explain that a little bit more. Like, what did they prescribe you? Because I've had six knee surgeries.
Mm-hmm. Oh my god!
I had an issue with OxyContin. They gave it to. I got angry. I got mad, and I decided enough's enough. And that's what they always prescribe me. And
you were lucky. I would have.
Well, my last surgery, I did it because like the ACL, they're like, you have to take this. It's going to be really tough. The other ones, I kind of stayed away from it after my first one. And it's no joke. It's no joke. So go into that a little bit more. I've talked to a lot of people that have dealt with that because addiction runs in my family. And I was really interested to hear how that progressed, but I didn't realize there was 3 ACL surgeries.
Yeah, so the last one was, you know, separate because I couldn't take any pain medication for it because of what happened with the first two. And so what happened was, yeah, I was prescribed pain pills for about 18 months altogether from start to finish, regular Vicodin. I mean, and my mom's a pharmacist, right? So that's an important part of the story too, because my mom, we very much knew what we were doing, right? We knew were to follow doctor's orders to make sure that I didn't have control of the pills, that I had to ask for permission to get them, that I wasn't, you know, running out of them 3 days into the prescription. We were like, I felt like we were pretty strict about it. And then the last time I went to a doctor's appointment for, like, you know, your clearance to your checkup to make sure I was done and able to be finished with the pills and, you know, continue with my physical therapy. The next day I woke up and I was sick. And I felt like I had the flu. My body ached. I mean, like, touching my hair hurt. I felt like stuffy, just like, I mean, felt like shit. Right. And I thought I was sick. I didn't even connect that it had anything to do with I had just stopped taking these pills every day.
Was it just like the next day?
The very next day.
Do you think a lot of that had to do with the I'm not going to get too scientific, but like the chemicals in your brain and also playing like a full body trick? Because usually it takes a little bit longer. Do you think that's the first stage that you felt like my brain is playing a trick on my body?
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on. Cause you have hindsight now, obviously.
Exactly. And it's easy to look back.
Right. Right. But then you're like, what's happening?
Right.
Okay.
And so I didn't know what it was. That was all it was I knew something was off. I knew something fell wrong. I didn't even really think twice about it. And I was telling a friend of mine, and I don't want to act like I was innocent at this point in my life, right? It wasn't like, I was drinking underage. I was smoking weed. I mean, I was doing things that I think other 16, 17
Do you think that played into it?
Were doing.
It always scares me with younger people.
It opened me to a group of people who were also doing drugs. And so when I went to a friend and said, I don't feel well, he's like, oh, well, it's because you're going through withdrawal. You're starting withdrawal. You were taking these pills every day and now you're not. That's why you're sick. Wow. Take this pill and you'll feel better.
Huh. And you did.
And I did. And I did that regularly. They ended up being his little sister's cancer pain medications.
Oh,
didn't even
gosh.
Know. And at a point, once I found out, to be honest, I didn't even care. I was so... just like, oh, this is what makes me feel normal. It wasn't even high.
You were so far down.
I was so far gone because I the first year and a half of it happened without me even noticing.
And you're 17 now?
17 years old,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so I took that and then I was, you know, getting them from him and then eventually getting them from other people that you just end up in circles where other people were doing pills too. There were points, OxyContin was just starting to, you know, get noticed as a problem.
Yeah, all mine were in my adult years.
Yeah. So and so that's when they were like trying to wean away from that. And they were moving to a drug called Opana, which was kind of like OxyContin mixed with morphine, double as strong.
That sounds miserable.
And yeah. And actually what we would do is we would find little old ladies who were prescribed these strong pain medications and couldn't afford to get their prescriptions. We would pay for the prescriptions for them. And she'd give us half the pills. And so I probably had in the years of doing pills, I probably had 4, 5, 6 old ladies in that same exact situation who, again, the healthcare system failed them. They needed these medications, but they'd rather have a half a pill a day than have none at all. And they could never afford it. So I would buy them, you know, different people's grandmas, aunts, neighbors, people they'd meet at work.
And the saddest part about what she's saying about kind of how that all works is they'll move you to another drug.
Right.
And you've been on the same drug and that causes another issue.
It's not the same, right?
Yeah, and how's your body going to respond? What's going to happen? Everybody's completely different. And that's what's sad about the healthcare system. I think the insurance companies have a huge issue with that. But like sometimes paying for it and not using any of that is actually cheaper, I've found.
Right.
I pay for some of my medications early on because the insurance is so high because I don't hit my premium. I wait till that comes in, then all of a sudden I have a cheaper insurance. But people aren't taught that.
No, and why would
sad.
You be? Why would you think
that? But that gave you an open door.
Exactly.
Sad.
And then one day I went to undergrad at Duquesne. And
so you're still functional. Like you're full throttle.
When I was
functional.
Doing pills, it was very functional. I mean, it was at the point where even my parents were like suspicious I was up to something, but they didn't think it was what it was. They never thought that it was pills. They never thought that I was buying them illegally. They thought that I was done using them when the prescription ended. But they knew something was up. And
how'd
so,
you get the money?
Oh, I always worked. I've been working almost full time since I was 13, 14 years old. I was 13 years old. The old Highland Country Club, if you remember that. That was my very first job. I was the only girl caddy at Highland Country Club.
No kidding.
Yeah, my seventh grade teacher was the caddy master at the time. And got me a job there. After that, I worked at a pharmacy, a little family pharmacy in the neighborhood I grew up, working, selling lottery tickets, working the cash register, eventually waitressing there at their lunch counter. And so I always worked, and I loved working. I'd babysit on the side. Wow. I like having money. I like to spend money.
Those two things usually, addiction and pills and everything, and that type of work ethic doesn't go to hand, right? It usually does opposite, because that's a downer.
Yeah,
you know, they start to fall. So.
Whereas it was very quickly at the point where I couldn't go to work unless I was high, and so people always imagine that you're like, you know, nodding off every time you get high. A lot of the times it was just I was able to get out of bed and function. And by the time I got to college, it was definitely that. If I didn't have drugs to wake up with in the morning, I could not go to class for the whole day.
And that was what, 3 years in?
3 years in. And then I went to 2 years in. And then I went to class all day. And then I worked at the Marriott across from the Civic Arena every day after school. And so I always worked because I had to get money to get high. And then one day in undergrad, I gave a friend money to go get me pills, and he came back with heroin. And it was like, well, you can either be sick or you can do this heroin. And I didn't even think about it. I did the heroin and I never stopped.
Really?
Yeah.
Like a needle.
Like a needle.
Wow.
Literally,
because that changed
everything. Getting pills to snort up my nose. And instead, I got a bag of heroin. Which, by the way, cost much less money than the pill I was buying. Well, so I definitely got ripped
off. That's the problem.
But that's, you spiraled out of control then at that point.
Really quickly after that. Because heroin's cheaper at first, and then very soon it's not anymore. You know, one bag's $10, but when you have to do 30 a day, you know, you're spending $250 to do that.
30 a day?
Oh, yeah. For most of my heroin addiction.
Like, put that in comparison of when you're taking pills. Like, how many pills would you take?
So a pill would be like $80 a piece. And I'd probably take two of them throughout a day. Like one would last me half a day. It had a longer half-life.
30 bags a day of heroin. Like, explain that.
Oh, very quickly.
But like,
started off with one, and then you got to do that more times a day than you have to do pills.
Because it goes through your system faster?
Exactly.
Wow.
And that was when, so people talk a lot about fentanyl now. Back then, like when you were looking to buy heroin, you were looking for fentanyl. Like you didn't want bags of heroin that didn't have fentanyl in it because it was such a better high than just regular heroin. It lasted longer. It was a stronger high. And again, more economical. If you're lasting longer, you're doing fewer bags a day. You're saving money. And so, you know, all this talk about fentanyl today, it's like, no, that's been around. That has been around. It's just knowing and being able to prepare and keep yourself safe from it.
Right. There's no regulations, obviously.
There should be. We could talk about that. I think the only way to end the overdose epidemic is to legalize all drugs the same way we legalize the drugs that we're consuming right now.
Tax the living daylights out of it.
Legalize it. Stop people from dying.
Okay. Well, we'll get into that down the road.
I don't know. I do know this, Brownie. If I was going to ever talk about it, I'd want to talk to somebody that's been through it.
100%.
I think how often decisions are made in every aspect.
No doubt.
And this isn't just politics. Aspect. And it's like, where's the person that's actually going to be affected?
No doubt. I respect all this. So at some point, we definitely want to get into that. But I want to ask, what did you go to school to study initially?
Public relations and a Spanish minor.
What did you want to do?
I had no idea. I knew I liked people. So I thought public relations was the best way to do that. But I don't remember. I mean, other than being a little girl and wanting to be the president or a lawyer when I grew up, both of which I'm kind of doing now. But I don't remember in my, like, getting to adult life ever having a career in mind. Heroin was all you think about. I wake up thinking about it. I spend all day working to get money to be able to go and get it so that I'm not sick.
So do you ever wonder what you would have done had you never touched it?
Every single day.
Where you would have gone.
There's no way in the world I'd be doing what I'm doing now. No way, because I wouldn't have the passion, the motivation, the experience. Yeah.
But why do you say that?
Because I would have just lived a regular ass life.
So you didn't want to be into public relations or be a lawyer or be the president prior to that?
I mean, when I was a wee little kid. Yeah. Like kindergarten,
and it came back around.
I wanted to be that. And then once I was in my recovery and I started seeing the things that I care about, I realized that those things were actually how I wanted to help people.
Wow. Yeah, I wonder, just as you're a sophomore, junior at North Hills High School, you're considering
colleges. I'm doing Future Business Leaders of America. I'm doing debate club. I was in all the gifted programs. I took all the advanced placement classes, the college and high school classes. I went to CCAC half day my senior year and got some college credits. Like, and I was, again, using drugs while this was all happening. it was very early on. It was just pills at that time. It was like low doses of pills. Because I also have very strict parents. So my parents are on me like a hawk. It wasn't until when I went to Duquesne, I lived there, even though it was 15 minutes from home. And I had all this freedom that I had never, ever, ever had before. And so it spiraled pretty quickly.
So Bethany Hollum, then now you wind up literally on the streets.
Oh, yeah. It was mainly in the back of a car, sleeping in rest stop parking lots, Walmart parking lots.
Age range. So like you started taking heroin in college.
Oh, yeah. In college, heroin. Yeah.
Sophomore year? Freshman year?
Freshman year.
And then now take it from there. When did you end up?
Because as soon as I graduated,
so I barely graduated.
Oh, I graduated. I have an undergrad. Wow. Mm-hmm. I have a bachelor's from Duquesne.
Think about that, Brownie.
I would argue heroin was one of the reasons why I was able to get through.
Well, at that point, maybe, but like thinking about how did you go to class? Mm-hmm. You're sitting in class for an hour and a half. I don't know how long this stuff lasts. Did you have to leave class, come back? Did you spend more time
between all my classes? I'd get high in the morning before I went to class.
Anywhere?
Oh, I carry a little bag. I had a little like Crown Royal bag that I kept my needles. Empty stamp bags. If I didn't have any bags, I could scrape them and do the leftover powder in them.
Wow.
A spoon, cotton swabs, all the tools.
I mean, you're a major outlier. Because, I mean,
why?
Because could anybody else have done this? Many people you know could have functioned as well, graduated.
I think that you would be so surprised how many people do.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
And succeed.
It succeed is the biggest thing. Like,
People maintain a lot.
You didn't.
You were a good student.
In college,
yeah.
You can literally look at my transcript and see the downhill.
Oh, really?
Absolutely. Oh. I was a great student in high school. I started off beginning of my freshman year in college really strong. And so I'm back in school now. I'm in law school again at Duquesne. And so I can still look at all my old transcripts in the same portal that I'm now looking at my grades now.
Wow.
And I watch just this.
The dip.
Oh, steep decline.
No. Like how
semester
bad?
After semester grades. I mean, by the time I finished, I barely finished.
Oh, okay.
So I was retaking classes that I failed. I graduated barely. There is no requirement other than passing. 4 years.
So once again, you're 4 years younger than me, I believe.
Uh-huh.
5 years was most people. So once again, to your point, Brownie, you're high functioning and you finished the race. And I think that speaks to who you are, but That doesn't happen, I don't think, with addicts that well. Because when you get that far gone, even if you're falling off the table, the fact that you got through it means that meant something. Because, like, that's incredible to me.
And I think I even thrive better in situations like that. Like, I notice even now, I like to have a million things on my plate.
I love chaos.
I love the chaos. It works well for me. The hard part is it doesn't work well for other people all the time. Nope. So and I'm just careful in which environments I bring.
Sustainable.
It is also not sustainable.
It's not sustainable. Short spurts, but not sustainable.
But I noticed as soon as I finished college and that major responsibility was on, like, the one thing my parents had beat into my head over and over again my whole life, you have to go to college. It was not an option in my house. You had to go to college. You had to get a degree. Now, I'm so thankful that they did that, because I would have never at that point in my life done it on my own. I would have never finished, and I would never be able to do what I'm doing now if it wasn't for having that piece of paper from undergrad.
Right.
And so I'm very thankful for that. But I did it, and then it was just...
Well, what did you do then when you graduated? What happened?
I waitressed. I bartended. I was in and out of trouble. That's when I started getting arrested. I had been, you know, in trouble for like underage drinking in high school, but I had never anything else like that before. I'd get caught with needles or empty stamp bags. I'd be driving without a license. So I lost my license for 10 days, got caught driving right before I got it back, and I ended up losing it for 10 years. I got caught over and over and over again. They add a year every single time. So I lost my license from 2010 till 2020.
Dang.
And
so did you have a Greyhound pass? What'd you do then?
No, and this was before, like, Uber was big and stuff, too. So people didn't... Oh, no, I drove without a license, as you can tell by how many years I got at it on. I just kept driving and kept driving and kept driving.
So it didn't really matter.
Right. Until I got a DUI.
Oh.
And I fell asleep in a 7-Eleven parking lot. And when I say fall asleep, I mean passed out from drugs. And I fell asleep in a 7-Eleven parking lot middle of the night. I woke up to the police banging on the door. And I got a DUI. And when you get caught driving on a DUI suspended license, you can actually go to jail or house arrest for getting caught doing that. So, you know, that was around the time. Now I'm like hiding, right? So Westview Police always had it out for me. So
really?
I just wouldn't drive through Westview. The Ross police would sit at the top of my
you
parents'
knew which
streetway.
One
I knew where to go.
Them.
Exactly.
What did your parents think during this time?
At this point, they're pretty disgusted with me, pretty disappointed. My mom and dad had very different approaches to how they handled it. Both, I think, worked out and like complimented each other, but very different approaches.
Which one was more strict?
My mom.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Like, wouldn't talk to me. Disappointed. Yeah. I'm a daddy's girl. Okay. My dad's my best friend in the whole entire world.
Unbelievable.
So your mom had it tough.
Oh, my mom had it tough. Like, my mom would tell me I couldn't come home and my dad would unlock the basement door.
Oh, my God.
I probably shouldn't say that in case they watch this. But, they're going to be fighting us.
Can you imagine this?
Yeah. Real talk.
Yeah.
What did that do to their marriage? Are they still together?
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
Yeah. How many times? 43 years.
That's amazing. Because how many times the love of a child breaks up that marriage?
The loss of a child, too. I've seen
Which, to a degree, is almost losing a child.
It is.
You feel like it. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, how proud are they of you now?
I think it's still kind of unbelievable to them. I think they have a hard time grasping.
I can't imagine what they must think.
Yeah, they feel like they know me too well to be like as proud of me as other people are. So that's kind of what they maintain.
Just shaking their head.
Yeah, they're like, oh, do you guys know her though?
But even keep them off the campaign trail.
Yeah. Oh, so my parents are not political. That's like a unique thing in politics. Yeah. I've realized is people who don't have political.
That's probably
parents.
Where you get your like reasoning and understanding and want to debate.
Yes. Oh, my dad and I will have debates.
That's hilarious.
Because my parents are the same way. My dad's now political. But I grew up and I knew nothing. Until 2020, I didn't even pay attention to the news or anything else. It was baseball. It was doing stuff in the community. I like to be active. But then all of a sudden I'm asking questions and both sides are destroying me.
Right.
Because I just wanted to understand because I never got any of those conversations.
People don't answer questions.
Yeah.
They change the questions. I grew up the same way.
I didn't ever have that conversation and being able to talk to you, Rob King, different opinions and having some arguments and some people didn't want to deal with it. Other people's, were willing to sit and have a great conversation. It changed my world. It helped me understand a lot of things that I needed to understand. But no matter what, I always was willing to say, well, tell me why. Like, let's hear why.
This is, as the lights go on, this is almost like we're in the bottom of the first inning of a 9-inning game.
Almost like it.
With Bethany Hallam. This is just a teaser. On and she loves the name, by the way, the podcast, Hold My Cutter. My Cutter's my favorite pitch in baseball.
She did it with the lacrosse stick, I heard.
Yeah.
Join us for the next episode, might be, with Bethany Hallam on Hold My Cutter. Great to have you, Beth.
Glad to be here.
I said Beth.
You were a little mad, though. You're a little mad. You're getting ready. You're getting ready for that, like, debate.
Join us next time we're on with Bethany Hallam.
Only Beth when I'm in trouble.
Right.